Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Internet Marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Internet Marketing Podcast brought to you by Site Visibility. Today with me I have Lilach Buluk. Go on, Lilach, tell me if I pronounced your name right.
It's pretty close. It's Lilach, but Lilach. That'll do. Honestly, don't worry about it. It's cool.
I did practice that one.
You did practice. It sounds good. Don't worry. It's very close. 9 out of 10.
Yeah. I'm used to learning a bit of Spanish and to try and put pronunciation on a different language. It's really tough to learn. But thanks for I was just saying to Lilach just before we started recording that it's the first time that I've used the LinkedIn audio description, which as a podcast that's really handy. So thanks for putting out there thanks for putting that on there, Lilach.
My pleasure.
And today we're going to be talking about how to create a killer content brief. But before we go into the detail of today's podcast, would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, sure. Thanks so much, Scott. I'm really excited to be here today. So I've been an entrepreneur now for around 16 years. I started because I wanted to spend more time with my family and work from home. The irony is that now everyone's working from home. I've built several businesses over the few years. I've sold a business. I've also lost a business. So I've had the ups and downs of a typical entrepreneurial life. I currently run my own content marketing boutique agency. I work with tech entrepreneurs, startups, helping them with their content marketing. I'm also a business coach. And pre-corona, I was also a professional speaker. So, yes, that's a little bit about me.
So, in short, you're very busy.
I like to keep busy, yes.
And we can edit this out if you're not ready to share it. But you're also soon to launch your own podcast. So you're welcome to share any details about that if you'd like.
Oh, thank you, Scott. Yes, I am. It's called The Lilach Buluk Show. And it's going to help entrepreneurs and business owners become more successful, focusing on everything from business tips to also the whole mindset around success and fears and what holds people back. So, yeah, I'm really excited to be launching it very soon.
And in that story of your career so far, can you maybe explain where, I guess, content came to the forefront and content production became the forefront and you launched your agency?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, my agency initially was in social media. So we used to provide social media marketing services. And obviously that's heavy with content because you need to be able to write great updates, social media posts, and they all need to be very content focused. I also had a strong email list, which was growing and growing. And now I've got around 20,000 on there. So I've always been obsessed with content and testing, you know, headlines and what makes people tick and to provide as much value as possible. So it was really a very natural progression. I was a prolific blogger. I wrote for hundreds of different publications, as well as my own site, and we drove a lot of traffic to it. So it was a natural progression. People started to ask me for content, and it just progressed and grew from there, really.
That's interesting. I always forget about the days, particularly with Twitter, where the character restrictions would force you to be really creative with copywriting.
My God.
And I kind of, in a way, it was, I look back on it fondly, but it was a real pain. And I'll tell you what, though, it does help you hone your skills as a writer. You learn how to be kind of really succinct. Is that what you found?
100%, yeah. And it's like, these people today, they have no idea how lucky they are, do they? You know, it used to take so long to write it. And it's funny because even now when I post an update on LinkedIn, I'll write a really long update and then I'll post it and I forget the word count there. So then I have to re-edit it as well. So it keeps us on our toes. But I think it's good to be able to write short, punchy things which grab people's attention. I think it's a really good skill to be able to learn.
Yeah, that's funny you say that. I'm exactly the same for pretty much any platform. I'm more of a natural long form writer. However, I do like the challenge of making things that are long more succinct. So I actually really love the process of going over my character count on any social platform and then having to reduce my word count, because it makes you really think about the words that you're using and cut out any stuff that is unnecessary. So
I do it all the time. You know, it's something that I wish I could say that first time writing I get the numbers correct each time, but I never do. So I'm always having to cut back and take. And often, as you say, I think it's a much better way of writing, because when we rewrite something, the more we rewrite it, often the better it becomes.
Yeah. And so you start to get more briefs for content writing. You start to build up that agency over time. I want to know a little bit about the position you're in now, and just setting the context for the listeners today. We're going to be talking about content briefs. And I just want to know, you know, how many projects, how many briefs are you working on each year at the moment? Are we talking hundreds, thousands over the years?
Okay, great. Now, that's a really good question. We tend to focus more on quality content and a lot of long form content. So when we write, for example, a blog post or a white paper, they tend to be, you know, at least sort of 1200 words rather than short 500 words. And also because we do a lot of website projects as well. So we're writing website content from scratch, or we're re-editing. So our projects tend to be longer, sort of meatier rather than high volume. It really depends on each given month. I mean, obviously with Corona, we are seeing less content needed. People are looking at perhaps doing in-house or putting it on hold. Or what we're finding is, instead of creating blog posts, they want sales content instead, or they're looking to revamp their website content. So it changes all the time.
Okay, well, that makes you a great person to speak to, because in my show notes, I've got a question and also some notes to say, you've probably seen it all when it comes to content briefs. So you've probably seen good briefs, bad briefs, briefs for different types of projects, and probably in all different formats. So I guess on that note, can you describe what makes a good, great content brief for you? So what, when you receive it, lights you up and makes you think, yes, this is something that I can work with?
Well, I think, first of all, receiving a content brief is a good thing, because actually a lot of the clients we work with, they don't know how to create content briefs, because they're not a content agency. They're not content marketers themselves. They just know what their goal is, what they want to achieve. So often we'll actually write the brief for them for their approval with some direction from them. But I think, obviously, that's not for everybody, and some do write detailed briefs. But I think, you know, what lights me up is actually receiving a detailed brief, which sounds terribly lazy, which doesn't require much input from me, and I can just go, yep, we're on it. That's absolutely fine. But often what we do is we'll put together a few outlines, we'll do some keyword research, we'll give them suggestions, recommendations, and we'll look at what the competitors are doing as well, just to give them more input as well. But, you know, if when you're not in this industry, it really can be difficult to write them. And often when they do write them, they don't focus on the outcome. They focus on themselves rather than what are the benefits to the reader. So we try to educate them. When we've been working with people for a long time, they'll also say, oh, well, you can do it better than us. Can you just, this is what we want to do. Can you do it? And just check that the keywords are there as well. But yes, I mean, when they do give me a content brief, because I tell you when they do give me a content brief, and that is often when they've already got in-house content marketers and they have an overflow, because then they're familiar with it and they know exactly what they're
doing. Right.
And then it's incredibly detailed, and that's really, really helpful.
Okay, so you were talking about certain elements of a content brief there. So whether you tend to receive a high quality brief, maybe from an agency, maybe from an in-house team that's kind of got overflow, or whether you then have to go through that process of helping someone write a brief. Can you break down what's included in your brief? So, for example, you touched on keywords, you touched on outcome. What physically forms that document for you?
Yeah, sure. So it's we'll look at things like the audience, what the objective is, what they want to achieve, what keywords, what's the purpose of this piece of content. Is it for the website? Is it to capture more leads? Is it to educate? Is it to inspire? What is the main number one focus of it? We'll then look at, obviously, the keyword side of things. We'll also come up with some titles. So, you know, thinking about things which are perhaps a little bit clickbaity, which will really, particularly if it's an email, you know, what's going to get people to click and open the emails. Looking at calls to action, how can we position them? When it's a website, we also look at positioning as well. So where wording is positioned and how it can really stand out and really grab the attention. And often we'll come up with a few different outlines and ideas as well, just so that people have a choice, because I think people like a choice. They want to be able to choose before it's approved.
That's interesting. And on the flip side, what's one thing that kind of you think is the most critical out of all of those elements? So what do people tend to miss in content briefs that you think is kind of critical to the writer?
Well, I'm a great fan in creating content with a strategy behind it. I think it's really important to not create what I call filler content. And definitely before Corona, we saw a lot of filler content. People had to create content for the sake of it. I think people are now much more mindful of that because budgets are less and people can't just spend money, what I call willy-nilly, as they say. Mm. So I think the critical thing is, what is the purpose? What is the number one goal? What do we want to achieve from this piece of content? And I think having that goal in mind is really, really important, so that we can make sure that we capture and achieve the goal.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's the phrase that I always kind of was, I came up in marketing within the last decade. So yeah, about 10 years ago. And the phrase that I got taught very early on is not to create content for content's sake.
Yeah.
And I saw being in the SEO space for quite a few years early on in my career, I saw a lot of that. So content was just being churned out without any, it was really just for ranking purposes, for SEO purposes. And then over time, I start to see a lot of projects undertaken to remove that content because people realized that it was just filler content.
Mm-hmm.
And at Site Visibility, actually, we had a lot of content built up over time. And when we look back on it, which we've been doing over the last couple of years, we chip away with content auditing projects. And, there was a lot of filler content on our site, which seemed good or maybe had a purpose at the time or maybe was just for SEO purposes. And we've had to go through the painful process of removing, editing, consolidating. And it's not a very enjoyable process to do that most of the time. So I think front and center for us at Site Visibility, I know for our marketing manager, Sean, and one thing I always challenge him on is, if you're going to create a piece of content, you've got to make sure you've got to really narrow that goal. And if you don't have a strong goal in mind, probably don't do it. Invest your time mm-hmm. doing something else.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. I think, and something else that we do as well, actually, and you touched that really well, is it's also about updating existing content. Because for SEO, when you update content, and particularly in our industry, things are constantly evolving and changing. And content can get outdated really quickly. So I think it's also about looking at what you already have and trying to work on that and improve that. It's not always about creating fresh new content all the time.
Yeah, that's true. And that's a good role of someone who's like in a position like yourself where, someone comes to you with a vision, which we'll touch on in a moment, and they ask you to create new content, and actually they might have resources right under their nose in which you can edit or update and actually create what they want from what they already have. And that's a great position to be in sometimes as well. And we've done that to great effect at Site Visibility sometimes as well.
Mm.
So it's not always about culling everything. It's about carefully, I guess, going through the content that you already have and making that decision about whether something does have value to be updated into the future. So it's really interesting that you get to handle that side as well. I'm going to ask you, maybe I just reverse your answer or in some way, but and reverse engineer it. But I'm going to ask you, what makes a bad brief? Maybe without naming names, could you speak on some of the worst briefs you've ever received?
Oh gosh.
Well, that pause meant something's in mind.
Yeah,
or
no,
someone.
I mean, I think a bad brief is just really no information. It's like. I mean, you need something to work from. And I think, I do pride myself in that I've created, I've developed a system so that this rarely happens, because I think it's also about building relationships with the people you work with and really understanding their business, their model, their target audience, so that you can sort of help them and guide them through it. But I think vagueness, I think this comes back to the whole filler content, because when they want filler content, the briefs are just really vague because they have no idea what to do. They just know they have to be creating content. So I think it's when it's really vague, and I think also when they want to achieve everything from one piece of content, when you know that the reality, that's just not going to happen. And I think also for me, it's little things like they'll say, okay, we want to create a piece of content. We want it to wow. We want it to rank for SEO, blah, 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 blah. But then they only want 500 words. And it's like, that's just impossible. So I think it's a mixture of managing expectations. And I mean, I actually won't work with clients like that anymore. I used to years ago, but now, I think I'm too old for that. I want to work with people who value my expertise as well as my content.
Well, I was just going to say, it's interesting that you say that, because I've covered that on the podcast recently about that gets to this point, what, regardless of marketing discipline, it seems, where there's a lot of our role as marketers where you're kind of responsible for educating people over time. Mm-hmm. But then it becomes that boundary. It's like, okay, is it my job to educate you to the degree, or where does trust fall into this equation? At some point, you have to stop educating, and trust has to kind of lead the way, and has to be mutual. And it's funny, a couple of times this has come up here and on my personal podcast, where people get to a point in their careers where they're much more confident in their own expertise, that they're not as worried, or they don't feel as much pressure mm-hmm. to educate. And that's not through laziness. That's through, you know, they want the trust that should have been earned through a career of doing good work. Yeah. And it's a really hard place to find as a marketer sometimes, because I don't know, I think there's a desire within us all the time to educate and to want to share knowledge. And for me, it's always not trying to, I actually said it before we started recording about something, it's to trying not be patronizing. You never know someone's level of knowledge. And so I'm always conscious of that. But I really love it. And I really think it's refreshing that I'm hearing more and more people say, actually, as marketers, you know, particularly if we've been in this industry some time, you're going to have to trust us, and you're going to have to let us work our expertise. And so that was just really nice to hear.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, we're an established content writer. So if they want someone cheaper, that they're definitely going to get cheaper than me. So if they don't, you know, what they're getting with me is my expertise, my knowledge, my experience of being in this industry, in this space for years. And with that comes recommendations. And if people or companies choose not to take those recommendations, it's kind of like, well, why do you want to work with us? Because that's our USP. That's what you're getting on top of a great piece of content. It's the strategic positioning of this piece of content. It's not just and because we're so good at what we do as writers, we do it in a way that's so subtle that people don't realize that it's even built for Google as well as the reader. They don't realize that there's all these subtle calls to actions and sales positioning behind it. And I think, yeah, I think it's a combination of, for me personally, being older, and also just accepting, you know what, I'm good at what I do. I want to work with people who value that. And if they don't, there's plenty more out there who will.
Yeah. I think that's a really good kind of train of thought to follow, and also it actually leads me onto something else I was just thinking as you were talking, is that I think I know we're going off on a slight tangent here, but I guess in a roundabout way, what makes a bad brief is a kind of lack of education, or lack of willingness to learn, or lack of willingness to trust someone. Mm-hmm. So doing something out of you know, maybe you get a brief that is born out of someone's vanity as opposed to a really defined outcome. I think that would be the way I'd summarize what kind of everything that you said about making a bad brief. But one, going off on a slight tangent, is I think that's a really underappreciated role of copywriters. I see this a lot. I see this sometimes at Site Visibility, but I just see it more generally in the industry and over my career, is that copywriters, just copywriting is an art. It's a craft, and you can be strategic, and there are a lot of strategic copywriters. And I think they get mistaken a lot for content producers. So just being told, you know, this is your brief, do it. Mm. And I just think that's I think with copywriters, people that are natural born creatives, I think you should just give them the freedom to explore a little bit more about what they can do strategically with things like you just said, calls to action, mm-hmm. tone, engaging within copy, hooking mm. people in. The emotional connection, that's what copywriting is. And content production just seems to, I don't know, maybe like you said, maybe it's just getting older and feeling jaded a little bit. But I think just when you talk about, you know, do all these amazing things, but make sure you fit it into 500 words, that to me sounds like it comes from a more SEO angle. And I just think that's a dangerous way of looking at some things sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's now at the stage where we won't take on those clients mm. because it's just not worth it to us. I don't want those type of clients. I want clients who want to create great content. And little things like, I'm now digressing, but you know, there's nothing worse than they're saying they want a blog post, but actually there's no, it's not a blog post, it's a press release.
Right. Yeah.
And it's about educating them that this is a press release. This is not a blog post, you know, and a lot of companies really find that hard to distinguish. It's about educating them that actually their blog needs to be as unpromotional as possible, and them getting their head around that. And often they do, but sometimes companies won't. And again, we can obviously create press releases, but we would call that a press release. And I'm digressing here, but I think there is the whole educational side. And some companies are really willing to learn, and they want to learn. They want to evolve. They want to improve. And it's often not a problem, but occasionally you do get the resilience, shall we say.
Yeah. Well, actually, it leads me on nicely to something I wanted to ask as part of this podcast anyway, because I talked about people that are maybe speaking from more of a perspective of vanity, or sometimes their briefs come from a point of ego as opposed to a defined outcome for the reader. But there are plenty of people out there who have great visions for what they want content to be. They know what the outcome is, but they really struggle to articulate it. I've seen plenty of creative people and plenty of people with great ideas who really just struggle to get that information and turn it into a brief. And I imagine you meet those people too. You've just said the people that are willing to learn, but maybe just aren't there yet. Is there anything that you specifically do, or questions that you ask of those people to help draw out that inspiration, those ideas from them, and turn it into a brief?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, that's a really common trait, because they're not brief writers. So, yeah, I mean, it's more a case of, as I said, understanding their business, understanding what they want to achieve, who their target audience is, what content they've had in the past, so what's performed well or what perhaps hasn't performed well. Looking at their competitors as well, seeing what they're doing, what's working and what's not working. And just really spending the time to understand what they want to achieve from this piece of content or a series of content pieces, and working out what their number one focus and goal is, and kind of working backwards from there, really. I see it as my job to get that information from them. And I think a good content writer can get that information from them. And I think it's our role to inspire them and to be creative and to give them suggestions of how other ways they could get their message across. You know, it's our role is to create content which educates and compels people, the readers, to take action.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, in what you said there, a lot of listening ability and listening skills that need to be learned. And I think that's a role, you know, if there are, I covered this actually in a podcast on the Internet Marketing Podcast, maybe 5-10 episodes ago with Joe Polizzi, the founder of the Content Marketing Institute. We were talking about characteristics that keep him engaged in content marketing. So, you know, within the same realm. And we were just saying how as a copywriter, you can be a great copywriter, or you can be a great content marketer if you're observant and if you pay attention and you listen a lot. So you kind of listen more than you speak. It sounds like those are the skills that you're talking about there, because you really have to pay attention to what someone's saying to draw out that information from them and turn it into what they're looking for.
Yeah, no, 100%. Another thing which I know a lot of website developers do as well. So whenever you're looking to create a new website, the first thing they'll ask you is, well, show us what websites you like and what websites you don't like, because you can learn a lot from that. And when companies I've worked with really have no idea of what they want, or they're just beginning, or they're quite novice to it all, I find that asking them, well, what type of content do you like? Because that helps you understand the sort of tone of voice they're going for, what turns them on, what turns them off. And also, it actually, without them knowing, gets them to start reading content online and in their space. Because I think the more we read, I mean, I consume so much content every day in my industry. because I think that's so critical for me, not only to learn, but also to learn new things about the industry, but also to discover different content styles. And I think that also helps them realize, oh, wow, there's so much content out here. How can we get seen? How can we be noticed? How can we be different? And I think all of these different things contribute and help them.
I'm a believer that with content briefs, the brief doesn't stop at the point in which it's signed off. And I'll explain that a little bit, and I'm interested to hear your perspective on it. I always think it's a good thing to, number one, if you're a copywriter and you have a brief, for me, that's kind of pinned to my desktop, or that's pinned to my browser, whatever it is. You know, I need to keep referring back to that brief as I'm writing to make sure I'm on track. But the other thing that I think is really valuable is that before you finish a content project, you know, maybe 30% of the way in, 50% of the way in, if you can, check that that content that you're producing aligns with the brief via the person that created the brief. So via the business that you're working with, or via your point of contact, because then you can avoid this issue where you produce something, you go a long period of time, they get, the business gets the content at the end, and then they're unhappy with it. So I guess I consider it like checkpoints within your content to make sure that you're on track. I'm just curious, from your perspective, is that something that you do? And how, post sign-off, do you keep things on track?
Yeah, no, I love this question. And I think the longer I've been in this game, shall we say, I think at the beginning, I think that is really important, because you need to make sure that you're aligned and that your client is happy. But I do find that the more time I spend in the beginning by listening to what they want and helping craft the brief either together or on my own and getting approval and feedback, the easier it is to be more on point. Now, I think when I'm writing, so we've just been writing some website content for a client, and there's definitely a lot more back and forth with website content, because you've got to make sure that the tone of voice is right. And often when they see it, there's changes, and then they often will say, well, actually, can we put it on the actual website so we can see positioning, and then we may need to change lines and things like that. So I definitely think it depends on the type of article or piece of content. But I think with something like website content, there's definitely a lot more back and forth. With a blog post, it's rare that I need approval for it, because whether it's 1,200 words or 2,500 words, I've kind of got to the stage that I know exactly what they want, and I don't start a piece of content until I'm confident that I can get them happy with it. We do a lot of product reviews as well, actually, for tech companies. But the more we do, we find that we don't have a huge editorial changing thing, which is why we offer unlimited edits, because we're so confident that we can get it right the first time, maybe the second. But I think that comes with time. You know, that hasn't we've been doing this for so long, and we work with clients that we understand. So, for example, if I don't know their business model, or if it's something that's not in my niche or speciality, I won't work with them, because I know that the process will be longer and they're better off working with someone else who knows their industry better. So I think part of it is also that we're more specialist, and we're good at what we do, and we spend that time initially in really understanding their market and the tone of voice that they want.
That makes sense. And one of my questions was actually going to be about kind of I've noted it as post-production amendments, and you've just noted it as kind of unlimited edits. Mm. So that's a really interesting thing to me as well. I think that's a great thing to offer, like you said, but it shows the confidence in that you're going to get it right.
Yeah, but no, we'll get it 100% right. We'll always have a happy customer and make changes until they're content with their content, basically. But I mean, it sounds really big-headed, doesn't it? But I like the phrase confident better. But as I said, I think it's because we know what we're doing, and perhaps I cheat because I only work in certain pieces, because I know that we can deliver good outcomes for them.
You've written lots of content about this kind of topic and lots in the realm of content marketing. So before we close, is there any either third party or your own content that you'd like to promote related to creating content briefs and the role of copywriters in that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I do have some really useful guides on my website, some content guides. So feel free to check out, shameless plug here. Thank you for the invite. But yeah, no, I'm always reading. I mean, I love HubSpot's content. HubSpot's content is phenomenal. They're like a content machine. And I would always recommend people to look at theirs. They often have really handy templates as well. Smart Insights is another good site. There's so many great sites out there. And I think that just says it all. It's such a competitive space that the days are gone where you can just create a shorter post. You know, you really, really have to stand out amongst the competition. But I try to create content on our own blog that is as good, if not better. I'm very competitive, unfortunately. But it does drive me. So, yeah.
And do you want to let our listeners know where else they can find and connect with you? So feel free to shout out social accounts, email addresses, whatever you're willing to share.
So my website address is www.lilachbullock.com. So that's Lilach, spelled L-I-L-A-C-H. Think of it as lilac with a H. I'm on Twitter, again, Lilach Bullock. Facebook, Lilach Bullock. I also have a new Facebook group, which I've just launched, which you can find me by my Facebook group. And if you want to send me an email, it's lilachbullock@gmail.com. And my new podcast will be launching very soon as well, so check out for that too.
Oh, excellent. I'll link to that in the show notes, providing that that's launched in time by the time we launch this podcast. Thank you so much, Lilach, for coming on today, for sharing your expertise with us. It was a really interesting discussion, and I'm hoping that it helps all the copywriters and content producers out there and content marketers to, you know, maybe there are a few tips in there to help you create better briefs, or if you're, you know, working with someone and you need to try and help them articulate their vision and what they're looking for, maybe there's some information in here which you can take away and help them create better briefs for you. Thanks again for your time today, Lilach, and this has been the Internet Marketing Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.